Welcome. Welcome indeed to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest today is Jim Fetzer. Jim, it's great to have you back. I know you've got lots on your mind. So have I. We certainly want to get into the issues you raised with me earlier this morning that you brought up, some links on the material that you sent me. And this is important stuff that we have not discussed on the program, so we certainly want to get into it. But I think it's a good idea to begin with Ukraine, because I've said it many times, I've written it so often, that without any question, the Ukrainian situation, the crisis conditions, are the gravest ones since World War II. That's no exaggeration at all. Literally, we face the possibility of things spinning out of control. We have violence completely unresolved in eastern Ukraine. It's spreading to a good number of cities. It's ongoing in at least 4 or 5 or 6 cities. It threatens to spread to over a dozen. There are many, many eastern Ukrainians, I believe growing thousands, that absolutely reject the Kiev fascist government, and they're really standing up very courageously, challenging it. They're not militants. They've been completely mischaracterized. They're not militants. They're not paramilitaries. They're not separatists. They're ordinary people. They're just like your neighbors. They believe their rights should be respected. They want international law respected. They want the things that everybody deserves, and they refuse to live under fascism. Everybody should refuse to live under fascism. They're coming up against the Ukrainian military, the government in Kiev, the coup-appointed government in Kiev, dispatched these right sector neo-Nazi thugs, hundreds, maybe thousands of them, to at least a few eastern Ukrainian cities. They committed abominable violence. They were the ones, good heavens, I wrote briefly about this a couple of days ago. I wrote about it in detail on Friday. I wrote about the massacre in Odessa. These were the people responsible for it. There were maybe scores, maybe even a few hundred activists, unarmed activists, trapped inside an Odessa Trade Union House building. They blocked the entrances. Some people got out. Most were trapped inside. They threw Molotov cocktails into the windows. They threw other devices. They literally set the building on ablaze, and they incinerated. The count varied as I looked at it. The last count I got was 46. 46 people incinerated in the buildings. Well, 46 people were killed. Most were incinerated inside the buildings. Some jumped out of windows. They preferred to die in a free fall than being incinerated in a very painful fire. Video, clear video shows exactly what happened. The major media, the scoundrel media, lied about it. The Ukraine government lied about it. They blame Russian forces. The major media, all the way from the BBC to NPR to the New York Times to the Washington Post to Fox News to CNN. I'll paraphrase what they said. Well, it's really unclear who's responsible for what happened. Jim, a comment I made in an article I'll put out tomorrow, I call the fire set in the trade union building an Immaculate Conception arson fire.
Western sources pump $5 billion into the Ukraine to create unrest. Even George Soros, in violation of foreign policy guidelines that technically make him a traitor to our nation, has run interference with U.S. foreign policy. The properly elected president had to flee. This is a fascist regime. The idea the Obama administration should recognize immediately the coup that took place as though it were legitimate is simply despicable, Stephen. And everything that's going on is a relatively predictable consequence of the outrage by Ukrainians who perceive what's taking place and won't accept the status quo.
Well, that's exactly right, Jim. I'm so encouraged by the heroism, by the courage of these ordinary people. These are just ordinary working people. They come from all aspects of the working class. They have all kinds of jobs. They can be in factories. They can be in mines. They're just people who want to live free. And they understand enough about what's going on in Kiev. They understand that a fascist regime took power. They point fingers the right way, Jim. I've quoted some of them, witnesses, some of them with names, some of them reporting anonymously, that America is directly involved in installing this government, and that's exactly what's going on. Obama literally was directly involved. Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs, Victoria Nuland, admitted it on a half tape that America spent over $5 billion manipulating everything that happened. She bragged about it, installing these putches. I mean, they're fascists, they're putches, they have no legitimacy, and they literally want to turn Ukraine into the kind of nation that nobody would want to live in. It wasn't perfect under the previous president, Viktor Yanukovych, but he was democratically elected. There was a scheduled election coming up in early 2016. Well, that's off the books, Jim. There'll be a so-called May 25th election held now. When it's held, Jim, it'll be completely farcical, completely illegitimate. The candidates that are competing have no interest in the people of Ukraine. They only have an interest in themselves. And the leading candidates so far, I haven't looked at a poll recently, but I wrote about one several weeks ago, an industrialist, I think is a guy called the Chocolate King. I don't have his name in front of me. You need the names unless you get used to them, because they're hard to pronounce. This guy is an oligarch. He's a billionaire, and he's on the side of the fascists. He's got something like, if I remember the rough poll numbers, maybe 30-odd percent support, and there are others that have very minor support. But these are the kind of people that will be elected to the presidency. They certainly won't represent the rights of the Ukrainian people. They'll take a bad situation and make it worse. And how many of the present officials will stay in the government? Who knows? But you know, if there's a change of management, everything will stay the same.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Stephen. I mean, this is really a stunning development. It's been properly said that the world's never been closer to nuclear war since the Cuban Missile Crisis. I don't think there's any doubt about it, and I know you're doing everything you can to make the public aware of the severity of the situation and that it's totally volatile.
Well, that's exactly right, and you and I remember the Cuban Missile Crisis very well, and I've stressed on this program, Jim, that one of the big differences between then and now, as history has told us afterwards, we came very close to that crisis simply because a mistake could have been made, and I believe, I don't want to go into that, that's a different topic altogether, but mistakes can cause wars, just like plans can cause wars, but back then we had Jack Kennedy, Jim, as we know, and Kennedy entered office as a cold warrior, but he transformed himself fairly early on into a peacemaker, and he later said he never had any intention of attacking Russia or attacking Cuba, and the people in his administration that suggested it, he wanted nothing to do with it. And I remember quoting from a Security Council meeting that he and some of these crazies were attending, and he was so infuriated by some of the things that they were saying that he got up in the middle of the meeting and stormed out of the room. He made no bones about how furious he was. Now, can you imagine Obama doing anything like that?
Well, JFK was upset because they were suggesting we could have a nuclear exchange with the Soviets, and because they'd lose 20 million and we'd only lose 18 that we would have won. And he went out saying then they called this the human race. Yes. He was completely disgusted.
Absolutely. I remember that line. I mean, he had people like Curtis LeMay around then.
Yeah.
Curtis LeMay thought, well, you know, let's nuke the Russians while we have a chance. You know, so maybe we'll lose Philadelphia, Washington, and Boston, but that's a small price to pay. We can level them. These are the kind of generals that infest the Pentagon. And very sadly today, Jim, I think some of the same kinds are around.
Yes, I'm afraid we have too many hawkish. Plus, you know, the Obama administration has been conducting a purge of admirals and generals. I think we have on the order of some 156 general officers who have been removed from their positions, Stephen. It's completely outrageous. I mean, I've never seen anything like it in the history of the American military.
And they've been removed for exactly what, Jim?
The removal of, apparently because they're not, in sync with Obama administration thinking, they may be opposing the administration. It appears to be a result of NSA surveillance that they're able to, you know who they should remove or take out of office. I mean, it's a really shocking situation.
Are these people anti-hawks?
I suspect they are, that they believe in the Constitution rather than Obama, and they don't believe that, you know, provocation should take place in the Ukraine.
Well, I must add to that comment, Jimmy. This is great to hear, but I'm not surprised by what you say. I have not seen a single thing in what I call the scoundrel media saying anything about this at all. Nothing.
Well, it's out there, Stephen. You just have to do a search, you know,
The New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, you know, the big ones, and on TV, CNN, the rest of them. I don't watch TV. I pick up a little sound bite every now and then, and I picked up a sound bite from Fox News at lunch yesterday. I turned it on just to catch the headlines, and they were talking about Ukraine, and Fox News blamed Russian special forces, something like Russian special forces, responsible for the Odessa massacre. And these are the kind of lines that you get on Fox News, but CNN can be just as bad.
Yes, absolutely. I'll pull up an article about it.
I used a quote from CNN saying, it really isn't clear just who's responsible for this. That's why I call it an Immaculate Conception arson. You know, no accelerant. Nobody started. It just happened. You know, like, it just happened all by itself. Building set ablaze. Dozens of people incinerated. It just happened. Nobody's responsible.
Steve, if you go through Obama replacing admirals and generals, you know, you'll find a whole host of articles about this. Obama administration replacing top generals. Obama changes direction of U.S. military command. Admirals and generals, oh my. I mean, there's a whole lot about it, actually. I'm just shocked because, I mean, it's been going on for years. There was some replacement following the Benghazi, but a lot of it has been independent of that, and it's fairly stunning stuff, Stephen.
Well, Jim, I think it's rather startling, and too many people don't realize it, that Obama is a guy who says one thing and he does another. He talks peace and he wages war. Literally, from day one in office to this very moment with you and me on air, Jim, Obama has not had a single day of peace in office. Multiple direct wars, multiple proxy wars, they're ongoing right now, and he's got more wars in mind, more conflict, and he's got the CIA. Oh, my goodness, Press TV had me on this morning. I included what they asked me about in an article I'll get out tomorrow. A German newspaper, Bild am Sonntag, reported that dozens, and I repeat, dozens of CIA and FBI agents are inside Kiev. They're directing policy, they're directing the violence, they're directing the Ukrainian military, they're directly involved in giving orders to the stooge government that Washington put in power to unleash this violence against ordinary Ukrainians and crush the resistance, et cetera, and so on.
Well, you know, Stephen, I mean, the Russia's foreign minister and the ousted Ukrainian president have both observed that the decision by the Obama administration to provide U.S. economic assistance to Ukraine's coup leaders is a direct violation of U.S. laws designed to ensure that juntas, which overthrow democratically elected governments, are not rewarded with U.S. taxpayers' money in the form of grants, loan guarantees, or other economic or military assistance. It was the original Foreign Assistance Act of 1961. That John Kennedy signed on 4 September that forbade such assistance, but Kerry and Obama are simply trampling over the you know, past laws that regulate this. It's like providing ongoing assistance to Israel when it has undeclared weapons of mass destruction, Stephen, as you well know. It's a principle of U.S. foreign policy that no foreign aid may be provided to a country that has undeclared nuclear, biological, or chemical weapons, which is the case with Israel, and yet we provided more foreign assistance to Israel than to all other countries combined.
Well, that's exactly right, Jim, and there was a later Leahy law that basically went over the same ground. It is illegal to provide aid. Well, it covers a lot of ground, Jim. It covers countries that violate human rights. I think that's what the Leahy Law may have been all about. Any country guilty of violating human rights is absolutely ineligible for U.S. aid in any form. And yet the aid flows to Israel, of course, more than all other countries combined, to the Egyptian junta with a fake election coming up, to the Bahraini government, brutalizing their own people one after another. This is the kind of stuff goes on. The laws are on the books, and they're systematically violated, Jim.
Here's an article. Why has Obama fired 197 U.S. senior military commanders, Stephen? 197.
Wow.
Think of it. This is simply outrageous.
That really is outrageous. If you have it in front of me, maybe off here later, you can send me a link to it.
Absolutely. I'll be glad to do that.
Oh, this is big stuff. So you get rid of all the people who oppose your policy. They're the most responsible people around. You know, you could call them the best of the worst. I don't know. I'm not a militarist, Jim, and I oppose anything related to militarism and wars and so on. And I just couldn't imagine making a career out of the military and going to war fighting for things that I oppose. But you take the ones who are most opposed to them, you get rid of them, and you keep the worst of the bunch in, and you try to get more of them involved. So Obama can unleash more wars against more defenseless nations and claim it's humanitarian intervention, the kind of stuff that you hear all the time. And then you get the scoundrel media, including the New York Times and the TV broadcast, Washington Post, the same crew, supporting this kind of stuff instead of forthrightly condemning it, which they do not do.
Yeah, I know, Stephen. You're so right. It's just disgusting. And, of course, we got so much going on here at home as well. I mean, it's just pathetic, and the way the American people are being played for sap, Stephen, and the way the national media, including the New York Times, has abdicated its responsibility. I mean, you can find more truth in Pravda than you can in the New York Times, and you can find more truth on Russia Today or on Press TV than you can on ABC, NBC, I mean, CNN, MSNBC. It's shocking, Stephen, the state in which we are today. I would never have believed this in my lifetime.
Well, it's true, Jim. It literally is. It's a nonstop propaganda system. And with the internet, anything online is literally 24/7, round the clock. You get barraged with this misinformation, this scandalous stuff. And for people wanting real news and information, stick with PRN. Stick with RT International. Used to be Russia Today. Now it's RT International. You can Google RT, Press TV, a Voice of Russia. You get real news and information. These operations have had me on. They have you on a lot, Jim. And you literally, I mean, people, they invite me on to speak as freely as I do in my own program, and they invite me back to do it again, Jim, and they do the same thing with you and other people just like you and me.
You're absolutely right, Stephen. It's a breath of fresh air, and anyone ought to go to, you know, just do a search on Press TV Stephen Lenman or Press TV Jim Fetzer, James Fetzer, they use my more formal name. Or, you know, there's just a huge amount going on out there, Stephen, that the American people are oblivious to. It's simply shocking how ignorant the people are in this country.
Well, it's really true, Jim. It was unusual today. Press TV had me on twice. Once was a recorded interview. The first one was on the FBI and CIA operatives in Kiev, and the second one was a recorded interview on the ongoing Iranian nuclear talks, the so-called P5+1. The major countries, Washington, China, Russia, Germany, Britain, France, and the Iranian nuclear negotiators. And it's very clear, based on annual annual combined U.S. intelligence assessments, that Iran's nuclear program is 100% peaceful. There's an annual assessment every year for a number of years. The same thing is said. Iran's nuclear program is peaceful. No evidence suggests otherwise. There's usually a tagline to the effect that we don't know that they don't have a military program, but we can't find any evidence to prove it. Well, if U.S. intelligence can't find it, it doesn't exist, Jim, and it does not exist. But and everybody in Washington and high places, in Israel, in Western Europe countries know this, and yet they claim otherwise.
Well, Ayatollah Khomeini, who is the supreme leader of Iran, has declared nuclear energy for all, nuclear weapons for none. That is the policy of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Our own intelligence agencies, all 16, converged in 2007 in concluding they were not pursuing a nuclear weapons program, which they reaffirmed again in 2011. And it's bizarre, Stephen, how discordant is our foreign policy with the best findings of our own intelligence agencies.
Jim, it really is true. And Ayatollah Khomeini, who came to power after the Shah was deposed, ironically, I'm sure you remember this, Jim, America encouraged an Iranian nuclear program, not nuclear weapons, but nuclear energy program. And one of the things that Shah ran afoul with America back then was the fact that he wanted to use the technology to compete with U.S. companies. Well, that was a no-no, and that was one of the main reasons that his tenure was cut short. And certainly the Iranian Revolution had a lot to do with the Iranians. Absolutely hated him. But America shoved him because he literally wanted to compete with the GEs of the world and other U.S. companies selling U.S. Nuclear technology. But the point I wanted to make was nuclear technology was encouraged under the Shah, and now it's deplored under the more recent administrations. And again, another example of U.S. hypocrisy, Jim.
You're absolutely right, Stephen. And, you know, Gordon Duff has issued a nuclear warning that 1.05 tons of highly enriched uranium was stolen from Pakistan on April 18th.
Wow.
And transported to the U.K., stored in a moving warehouse in Devon, that the facility involved has been used previously to store illegal weapons by security agencies of the U.S. and the U.K., including South African weapons of mass destruction. From there, Gordon reports, the shipment was broken into three parcels, is being transferred to the United States in shipments from Heathrow and Gatwick, and that we're told that computer viruses are taking down the capability of the U.S. to disseminate information about all of this. According to Gordon, this particular case is not one of an Israeli plan, but some right-wing conspiracy here in the United States, and his guess, and he admits it's only his guess, that China and Pakistan are going to be blamed, but that Iran will be attacked after Fall Guy facilitators are created and pristine passports are found, as with 9/11. I mean, this is the kind of treacherous world in which we live today, Stephen. It's completely outrageous where our own government is trying to precipitate a nuclear war in which tens of millions will die to advance its political agenda.
Jim, it really is incredible, and I don't have the timeline, but I think it's coming up very, very soon. The next round of the P5+1Iranian nuclear talks are coming up, I think probably sometime next week, certainly within days. And ahead of them, top U.S. officials from State, from CIA, from other U.S. agencies are going to Israel. Israel isn't part of these negotiations, but Israel is the very visible elephant in the room while they're going on. And top U.S. officials are going to Israel to be sure they're on the same page how they want to proceed with these talks. And Iran believes that they're really making progress toward a final resolution sometime around mid-year. We're getting close. We're in May now, and the timeline was supposed to be sometime in July, so we're getting very, very close. And I've been suspicious all along. I believe that very possibly Washington wants to subvert these talks and end up blaming Iran for doing it and literally turn truth on its head again, blame Iran, and precipitate more conflict, which could give Israel a pretext to attack and maybe for Washington to support something happening. I mean, Israel threatens an attack all the time. There's no way that Israel will do it without America signing off on it. But if something can be manipulated and twisted to make it look like Iran is violating the terms it swore to uphold, then this would be a pretext for an attack, and that could be a very, very grave situation. We could have the whole Middle East embroiled in conflict, and it literally could end up a nuclear one.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Stephen. There's no doubt about it. No doubt about it at all. And the situation is completely volatile, and it's happening very, very rapidly. And in my opinion, it's spinning out of control. We already have to confront the reality of what is going to be a civil war in Ukraine. And, you know, Russia cannot stand by and allow Ukraine to be turned into some kind of neo-fascist empire right on its border. I mean, Ukraine has long historic relationships with Russia. This seems to be a playing out of Zbigniew Brzezinski's grand chessboard conception that Russia without Ukraine is a very weakened, gravely weakened nation, and that they are playing it out. You know, this is a neocon agenda at work once again.
Well, that's exactly right, and I've also said that neocons infest Washington, and it's not just Republicans, it's absolutely the Obama administration. Victoria Nuland certainly stands out. She's married to a vicious neocon, Robert Kagan, one of the co-founders of the Project for the New American Century. I mean, an extremist neocon, and Victoria Nuland, I wrote a profile about her. She was an advisor to Dick Cheney, if you can believe that, all kinds of other posts before her present one, and of course, she was the point person in charge of manipulating the ouster of Viktor Yanukovych in Ukraine and installing the putschist in power, the fascist, directly involved in that. She's going back to the region. I'm not sure when and exactly where she's going, but she's still involved. She's visiting other countries. She's a real mischief maker, but she's not the only one. I think Susan Rice is one of the ones heading for Israel. And my God, I mean, she's one of the worst national security advisors. Oh, she absolutely has neocon credentials. Samantha Power poses as something other than what she is, but she's vicious in the comments she makes in the UN.
I won't be surprised if this is like a last desperate effort to try to subvert the agreements with Iran, which of course are to solve a non-existent problem since Iran doesn't actually have a nuclear weapons program. But this is one of the few areas in which I have felt that Obama was actually doing the right thing, Stephen, by working this out diplomatically. It's got Netanyahu tearing out what little hair he has. He desperately wants to engage the United States in a war with Iran. He's been attempting this for decades.
Well, that scares me. I honestly see a Syria war coming, a direct U.S. Involvement in Syria. We've had the indirect involvement for, oh my goodness, it's getting on. February 2011, I believe, either February or March 2011 it began. So here we're into May. We're starting to push closer to 3.5 years, and I call it Obama's war in Syria, which it is, and it still rages. The Syrian military is really taking very good care of the foreign invaders, and most of the militants in Syria are coming from other countries, dozens of countries. There's no question about that. There's a lot of big stuff going in Syria. The Assad government has taken control at least of most of a very key city, Syria's third largest city, Homs. It was the stronghold of the anti-Syrian government, and I just know a few of the details, but apparently there was something like 1,000 of these foreign invaders, extremist fighters, trapped in the city, and they were really going through a lot of duress. They were trapped in the city, they were suffering, they couldn't treat their wounded properly, apparently, and they cut a deal that they could leave. Why the Syrian government would let them leave, I don't know, because their wounds can heal and they can come back and fight another day, but apparently some kind of a deal was struck where the Syria would take over the city of Homs, and these people would be evacuated. Now, if enough of them were in bad shape, wounded or whatever, they were in no shape to fight, so that would take them out of combat. But more can easily be brought in, and probably they will be. But the fighting continues. The Syrian government maintains control. At the same time, there's an early June presidential election coming up, Jim. I intend to write about this. I haven't done it now. Assad declared his candidacy. The Syrian court accepted that. You saw something about that today. He is overwhelmingly popular for good reason, and that's important to stress. The last poll I saw was months ago, Jim, an astonishing poll, if you can believe this, conducted by NATO, and at that time it said something like 70% of Syrians supported Assad. Now, why on earth would NATO want to do a poll like that and publicize it? 70%. And I've said, I said this during the Libyan war, that the longer these wars go on, the stronger the support gets for the leader of the country, because who else do they have to turn to for support against the outside attackers that are literally massacring them, destroying their lives, destroying their countries? And at the end, before Gaddafi was deposed, I saw numbers on the order of 90% plus of Libyans supporting him. I can believe it, and I would guess that maybe 80% of Syrians support Assad. He'll win in a landslide, but you know what's going to happen, Jim. Washington, European countries, the scoundrel media, they'll claim the vote illegitimate, even though it'll be independently monitored, it'll be absolutely legitimate, but you'll never know it reading the New York Times or the Washington Post or the others.
Well, you've nailed it, Stephen, again and again and again.
He's going to win, Jim. There's no question, and he should win. He's not my perfect kind of president. He's authoritarian, but he's gotten much more democratic over the last 3.5 years. There was a parliamentary election in 2012. May have been in May. It may have been just about 2 years ago. It was independently, I'm going to include this in my article, it was independently monitored. This was while a war is going on. It had a reasonably high turnout. People came out. The monitors claimed the election was very, very open, free, and fair. There was a constitution enacted. It was done by national referendum, and it came, I believe, in two waves, with things in the Constitution there was a lot of opposition to. They were changed. A second referendum was held, a second vote, and it passed overwhelmingly in a state of war, and this was debunked as illegitimate by the Western powers and by the major media. I'd like to see something in America like this, Jim. There's never been anything like this. And I think that there'll be something that is very, very open, free, and fair in June in Syria. Assad will prevail, and we'll be right back to square one. The fighting will continue. And that's when I fear, Jim, that Obama may find a pretext to intervene directly. And I call it, U.S. intervening, bombs away, America unleashes the Pentagon, and maybe gets a few NATO allies to go along. That's what I fear, and then Iran would be next.
Well, Stephen, I think you've knocked it out of the park on this one. I think you're exactly right. If we have the opportunity for a few developments here in the U.S. related to the Boston bombing in Sandy Hook, I would be glad to share them with your audience.
Oh, absolutely. I'm concerned with both of them, Jim. I only wrote once about Sandy Hook, and I did it from a different perspective than you did. I did it from the perspective of America has a culture of violence, rather than all the important information you put out in a good number of articles, and we discussed it last time on the program, and I know you have new information on it, and I very much want to hear about it. I wrote several times about the Boston bombing. The kids, they were lawlessly framed for something they had nothing to do with. And of course, that was a year ago, April. Yeah, it especially concerned me because a terrible wrong was committed. But it's also my hometown, Jim. I grew up in Boston. I know exactly where the marathon ended, where this incident took place in Copley Square. I've been there. I haven't been there in a lot of years, but I've been there many, many times in the past.
Well, let's work backwards and start with the Boston bombing then, Stephen, because a film director by the name of Nathan Foulkes has come forward to identify that the Boston bombing was a staged event, that it used what's known as hyper-reality filming, which simulates horrific events to train military forces, for example, for what they're going to encounter when it actually happens, and that he even noticed the key player there, this fellow Jeff Bowman, who allegedly had both legs blown off below the knee, actually was somebody that he had cast in a film of his own.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness.
Yes.
But one of the brothers was murdered, and the other one, I don't know why they didn't kill the other one, Jim. Exactly what's going to come out in court, I have no idea. But apparently he's recovered, and I remember saying in one of my articles that they gave him a very short conversation with his mother, the better part of a year ago, and he said to his mother, he had nothing to do with what happened in Boston.
Stephen, yep, that's absolutely correct, and they've actually even murdered a friend of the brothers. The FBI murdered him in his own home, apparently because he wasn't being cooperative, claiming he'd come at them with a broom handle. How ridiculous is this? But this point about Nathan Foulkes Stephen, is really important. He watched the hyper-reality scene unfold. He was thinking they were able to get away with this, supposedly live television broadcasting, but it wasn't live at all, but edited, because in live footage, you don't cut from one scene to another. That the live TV footage was using an older technology that's grainy instead of the high def available in 2013. Asked about Jeff Bowman, who supposedly had both legs blown off at the marathon, he said, someone who lost both legs would spend at least a year recuperating. Instead, Bowman was a hockey game 19 days later. Paramedics and doctors know that someone who's lost both of their legs must not be moved and certainly not put in a wheelchair and moved down a road, because then gravity helps to draw the blood down, through their legs. I mean, with a wound like that, Stephen, you're normally unconscious in 1 minute, dead in two. Another report comes from Lorraine Day, who was an orthopedic trauma surgeon for 25 years at San Francisco General Hospital, and she is convinced that and has enumerated a whole host of indications that this was a false event in her own study entitled "No One Died at the Boston Bombing, Nor Was Anyone Even Hurt," except, of course, for the innocent suspects, the Tamaroff brothers, who were killed or maimed by the police. Here are some of the points she makes. In the pictures taken immediately after the blast, there is no blood on the ground. That could never happen. A bomb blast instantaneously would have spread blood from the injured victims everywhere. There were only about 10 victims at ground zero of the blast, and all of them are alive, do not appear to be even close to death. Where are the other 200 people that, later news reports claim were also injured? When blood does eventually appear on the sidewalk, it is some kind of paint, not blood. It's bright orangish red for maximum frightening effect on the audience. Real blood is dark maroon because, as I mentioned before, it oxidizes and turns dark red. Notice in the initial pictures after the smoke bomb exploded, almost all the victims are holding themselves up on one elbow. They're sitting up. No one is in severe pain or really in any pain at all. Severely injured people are not propping themselves up on one elbow. They'd have their heads on the sidewalk. Obviously, these crisis actors don't want to put their head or the side of their face down on the dirty Boston sidewalk for everyone walks and spits. It goes on and on, Stephen. Now, I've done a recent debate about the Boston bombing for American Free Press, and you can find it under the heading "Date with a Debate: Boston Marathon Bombing, Jim Fetzer versus A.J. McDonald Jr." And they have added there a link to the PDF of the doctor I was just quoting, Lorraine Day, where you can gain access to it or by doing a search. But the fact of the matter is, the whole Boston bombing thing was a staged event, and I think it's very, very important that Nathan Foulkes has come forward to identify what's going on here.
Oh, it sure is. It sure is. But you know, how much resonance do we get, Jim? We get plenty on programs like this, on the media we mentioned before, Press TV, RT, Voice of Russia, etc. And yet the megaphone that propagandizes the opposite stuff, they're the ones that attract the main number of readers and viewers and so on. And the only good news about that is that they're losing readers and viewers. The TV ratings are down. Major newspapers are going defunct. My own Chicago Tribune is still printing, still operating, but it went bankrupt, my goodness, a few years ago. New York Times in big financial trouble. Other newspapers in big financial trouble. There's an easy way to put these guys out of business, Jim. Stop reading their publications, tune out their TV programs, and they'll disappear in plain sight. We'll never have to put up with them again. That's my advice to people.
Well, you're absolutely right. We also have new developments in relation to Sandy Hook, Stephen, where Wolfgang Halbig, who is this retired Florida State trooper who had 36 years in school administration, including as an assistant principal and as a principal, who's a nationally recognized expert on school safety. He conducts seminars all over the nation, Stephen. He has been trying to find out what happened at Sandy Hook so he could advise other school districts on how to make sure it doesn't happen there. But while he submitted one FOIA request after another, he has been completely sandbagged. Did your audience realize that in the final official Connecticut State Police report, the names of the alleged victims are not given, nor is their age, nor their sex, that there are 52 autopsy photographs, all of which are redacted, that the Connecticut, the Newtown state clerk went into secret negotiations with the state legislature to avoid having to release death certificates, that the attorney general of the state argued against the release of the 911 phone calls, that a special panel of the state has recommended that anyone who talks about Sandy Hook, other than responding through a formal information requests should be subjected to an e-felony with a five-year penalty, that those who are involved in the cleanup, the destruction of the school, which was laden with asbestos and biohazards, has had to sign a lifetime gag order, Stephen. Not to talk about what they did see, but what they didn't, namely the absence, I'm sure, of pockmarks from bullets having hitting walls or blood on the ground. We now have photographs, not only one from a Connecticut state helicopter that was taken at 9:15, Stephen, which is remarkable because the first 911 call didn't come in until 20 minutes later. But we also have a what appears to be the earliest photograph of the Sandy Hook scene after the shooting, and there are a couple of individuals there. No one is acting, you know, anxious or excited. There's no surge of EMTs into the building. There are no ambulances present. Questions have been sent to me by a principal by the name of John Adelman, whom I happen to know from Des Moines, Iowa, have raised serious questions about all of the kids. This was a K through 4 school. I checked it out. It had a 10-star rating as a very high-quality school. They had 626 students, Stephen. If you subtract 20 who were allegedly deceased, that leaves 606. If buses require, take 48 to 50, that means there had to be at least a dozen buses there to evacuate. No students, no buses, none of that's there. There is a photograph that was widely distributed at the time showing a teacher seemingly assisting children out of Sandy Hook, but that was taken months before at a different location. That was a form of disinformation, Stephen. And there's another photograph that shows a sign for Sandy Hook School, and in the background you see fire engines and a lot of activity and a building that's partially obscure, but they turned around the sign for Sandy Hook School. That's the fire department that was a quarter mile away, another form of photographic deception. Wolfgang is going to Newtown on Monday to confront the school board at a school board meeting, the monthly school board meeting on Tuesday. I am going to be with him there, Stephen, and we're going to get to the bottom of this Sandy Hook fakery. The school board has to know. In fact, we have information from a Wayback Machine that shows there was no computer activity at the school from 2008 to 2012. You can't conduct school activities without having computers these days. That's simply ridiculous. We also have noticed that in relation to the parking areas, which can even be seen in that second photograph I mentioned, the parking areas for the disabled are not properly demarcated. There are no signs for the parking in accordance with Connecticut's own laws regarding the implementation of American for Disability Act requirements. We have videos from inside the school that show, as one plumber observed, that they yanked out a commode to try to make it look as though it was ADA compliant, but actually it wasn't remotely. And other teachers witnessing this have noticed there were lots of boxes and other equipment being stored in the school, which is exactly what happens when a school is abandoned. They use it for storage, and even external photographs of the school show it was in a dilapidated condition. It turns out that even the Newtown Bee published an article about the school, that it was laden with asbestos and other biohazards and would be beyond being refurbished, which I believe they had known as long ago as 2008, which was probably the reason why they closed the school then. The school board has to know what happened to those 600 children. In fact, we have one radio show host who said that they had residents in the vicinity who said that the school had been closed and there weren't supposed to be any children there. That looks to be exactly right, Stephen. This Sandy Hook event was designed to subvert our Second Amendment rights, just as the Boston bombing fakery was designed to subvert our Fourth Amendment. This is disgusting stuff, Stephen. The American people have to know.
Absolutely, Jim. What really hits home to me is this. America is at war, multiple wars abroad, and it's at war at home with its own people in multiple ways, whether it's Sandy Hook, whether it's the Boston bombing incident, whether it's all the police state laws put on the books by the Bush administration, by the Obama administration, not just the laws out of Congress, but presidential executive orders, memoranda, all kinds of things. And most disturbing to me, Jim, is that too few Americans have any idea what's going on. I had a dental appointment last week. When my teeth were clean before the dentist came in to check me over, the woman who cleaned my teeth, an intelligent woman, I happened to mention Ukraine, I mentioned the book that I'm involved in, and she admitted to me that she really doesn't know much of anything about what's going on in Ukraine, and I didn't say anything to her, but that dismayed me so much, because here's an intelligent woman, and if she doesn't know anything about Ukraine, she's probably very similar to so many millions of Americans who either know very little about it, or if they do, they simply don't care, and they don't realize how gravely this potentially affects their lives, and the lawlessness by their own government that's being committed, not just in Ukraine, that may be the biggest one of all going on, potentially, but so many others, and they're too busy in their private lives to pay any attention to these terrible things going on that potentially that can come back and bite them so harshly if people don't stand up and oppose them and do something to stop them.
Stephen, you're so absolutely right, and it's just appalling. And I have articles about all these things. On the Boston bombing, I have one entitled Boston Bombing New Hampshire versus Jim Fetzer. I also have a video clip from a conference I participated in last year in Philadelphia entitled Free Your Mind, Jim Fetzer, where I begin with the Boston bombing, then turn to Osama bin Laden, JFK, and end with Sandy Hook. And one of my most recent articles on Veterans Today about Sandy Hook is entitled Sandy Hook Elementary School Closed in 2008, a stage in 2012. Americans need to get up to speed about all this because we, frankly, are being played for saps.
We really are, and the biggest sap is us, of course. The idea that we let our government get away with this stuff and rob us blind at the same time by stealing our tax money to wage foreign wars, by giving it to bankers, by giving it to other corporate favorites, and the dirty game keeps going on and on and on. I mean, how far is it going to go? Should we wait until everybody is scammed, everybody is impoverished? The poverty rate in America is multiple times higher than the official numbers. The U.S. Census Bureau, I wrote about this a long time ago, the U.S. Census data shows that half of U.S. households are either impoverished or bordering on it. The official poverty line for a family of four is $23,000 or $24,500. There's nobody who can live. Nobody can live in downtown Chicago with a family of four on that kind of an income. You know, maybe in some kind of a ramshackle place with absolutely no amenities, nothing other than bare bones ability to maybe get by best they can. Probably relying on food bank aid, food stamps are being cut, food bank aid to supplement them, to feed their kids. These kinds of horrors are going on, and people do nothing to challenge them.
I'm on the air, Dennis. I've got to call you.
I mean, it pains me, Jim. You know, when April 15th came around not too long ago, it pained. I didn't have to send a check. I'm getting a rebate this time. It hasn't come yet. Small rebate. I hate a rebate. I'd rather pay them a couple of bucks to get a rebate. A rebate means I loan them money tax-free. I don't want to loan them 2 cents. But it pains me, Jim, to send them 2 cents to use my money to wage foreign wars, to murder people around the world, to further their imperial agenda and cause all kinds of human misery and do it at home at the same time. For me, for my tax dollars and everybody else's to go for that purpose, I call that a crime against humanity.
Oh, you're completely right, Stephen, and they're going on right here in the United States under our very noses. The third story I wanted to bring to the attention of your audience concerns the former top shrink for the FBI who's about to be involuntarily committed to a prison psychiatric facility for indefinite detention. His name's Alan J. Salarian, Stephen. I know him personally. I've stayed in his homes. He has stayed in mine. The official reason is that he's not currently competent to assist his legal counsel in their defense against charges that he's become a drug distributor through his medical practice, charges that have no foundation, where the real reasons appear to be completely different, including that Allen and his colleagues have pioneered the responsible use of narcotics to reduce pain and anguish for their patients, where their efforts have been perceived as undermining the war on drugs, that two of his closest associates in these efforts, Kevin Byers and Sovan Reynolds, who, like Allen, were members of the Board of Physicians Against Cruelty to Humans with Imperfect Brains, of which Byers was its legal counsel, died in a mysterious plane crash that may well have been deliberate. It certainly looks that way to me. That he has been a persistent critic of the CDC for distributing misleading statistics and for promoting the impression of non-existent epidemics, where their efforts collectively have constituted a serious attack on the war on drugs, which has many financial and political beneficiaries, including the DEA, and because he has spoken out about the assassination of JFK and published on the possible use of a paralyzing dart to immobilize the president, and on aspects of the alleged Sandy Hook child massacre, including a psychological evaluation of the testimony of Gene Rosen, a key witness, which he has discredited. I mean, there's a tie here with Sandy Hook, because Gene Rosen claimed that he had heard shooting, he had heard shots at the school, that a bus came by and dropped off six children, that they came in and he gave them cookies and orange juice and they played with stuffed animals before they got around to talking about what had happened. Allen dissected this interview, which I had on video, and explained how if he had heard shooting, he ought to have called 911 immediately, that if children had been subjected to such a horrific experience, they would have been unable to not talk about it. They would have been, you know, semi-hysterical and talking about it immediately, and that his whole story appears to be a charade. Turns out the guy's actually a member of the Screen Actors Guild, Stephen, and would you believe, even his story about a bus having dropped them off implies the presence of buses, but you can look and look and look through all the videos and you don't see any buses, even though there were some 600 students, as I have already explained, who needed to be evacuated. Where are the 600 students? Where are the buses? So we not only have no EMTs rushing into the building, no ambulance, no medevac helicopter brought there to transport them to hospitals where they could be declared to be dead or alive, but we have this preposterous story of Gene Rosen about these young people that simply doesn't add up. And for this, Alan Salarian, I believe, is being savaged. A couple of years ago, there was a raid on his home, Stephen, by some 20 heavily armed DEA agents in bulletproof vests with automatic weapons. They confiscated all of his computers, his three automobiles. They froze his bank account, allegedly over $100,000 he had in one account, which was there for medical equipment. They claimed it was from drug dealing. He has been put into bankruptcy, and he's been, you know, he's being grossly abused. And I say everyone should read about this. Go to the article entitled Stalinist Style Show Trial, Former Top Shrink for FBI to be Involuntarily Committed. There's no reason, Stephen, why if he needed a psychiatric evaluation, it couldn't be done on an outpatient basis. I'm convinced they want to get him into a facility in a prison psychiatric ward where he can be subjected to invasive drug and perhaps even electroshock therapy to alter his ability to reason and turn him into an obedient serf of the state.
This is a great explanation of a police state, Jim. And that's exactly what America is. A vicious police state. It challenges people. It should honor. It goes after some of America's best, brightest, and most responsible. And it does this kind of stuff to them. I had a program a week or so ago on Dr. Rafael Dafir, had Catherine Hughes on. Catherine sat through his 17-week show trial in Syracuse, New York. He was sentenced to 22 years in prison for what Catherine wrote about and called his crime of compassion. He supplied with his own money with a doctor, an orthopedist, I believe, $1 million of his own money, plus the money he raised through his own charity. He donated it. He spent it providing vital food and medicines to Iraqi people during the 1990s sanctions. He was prosecuted by the Bush administration. Obama has done nothing to rectify the injustice against him. 22 years in prison. He's been in prison about 12 years now, no prospects at all of getting out, nothing done to help him. This is what's done to some of the best people in America, and he's not the only one. There are many, many people just like him going through the same thing, and here you raise a major issue, Jim.
Well, Stephen, if those in your audience will go to the article I have mentioned on Veterans Today, Stalinist show style show trial, former top shrink of FBI to be involuntarily committed, they'll find a letter I sent to the judge who's going to commit him, whose name is Pamela Mead Sargent. I give her address. I even give her phone number. If they believe this is wrong, as I believe it is wrong, they could write or call the judge and express their opinion that voluntary outpatient treatment is appropriate in this case, if such is required at all. But to incarcerate him in a prison psychiatric ward where he can be subjected to invasive drug and electroshock therapy is a disgrace and should not be done here. You're absolutely right. This is what happened in the Soviet Union, Stephen. This is not the United States. We're turning into the USSA.
Well, that's exactly right. Some of the things that go on here match the worst of what happened. I mean, not only domestically, Jim, but around the world. The worst of the Soviet Union back in the Stalinist days, the worst of Nazi Germany. I mean, even Nazi Germany, I mean, waged war in Europe, across North Africa, so on and so forth, a little bit into the Middle East. America wages a global war, literally. I mean, millions of corpses. I mean, literally matches the viciousness of the Nazis and the viciousness of the Stalinists. His crimes. And
Stephen, get this as a postscript. Not only have his computers and his cars not been returned, not to mention has his bank account been unfrozen, but he got a notice recently that one of his cars had been cited for a speeding violation. Obviously, it wasn't driven by Dr. Solarium.
Well, I wonder, Jim, when they're going to come bang on my door and ask me to be held accountable. I once asked law professor Francis Boyle, what do I do if the FBI comes by and wants to talk to me? He said, ask them to show their ID. and he said, if they show a gun, do anything they want. In other words, if they want to, they could just shoot me on the spot.
As they did that friend of the Sarnoff brothers, it's completely shocking what's going on in the country this day. He didn't want to be cooperative. He didn't want to play along. He didn't want to say that they had been involved in terrorist activities when they had not. So the FBI shot him in his own home.
And then blame somebody else for doing it, or he committed suicide.
No, they blame that he came at him, that he tried to attack him with a broom handle. It's ridiculous.
Oh, these kind of lies. Afia Siddiqui, you remember her, don't you, Jim?
Yes, indeed.
Oh, the Pakistani scientist who was railroaded to 87 years in prison, they lawlessly claim she tried to attack armed U.S. soldiers and an interrogator and so on and so forth. I wrote many articles about her. It was a completely trumped-up story. She was shot, well, it's a long story, can't go into it, and we're almost out of time, but they literally turned truth on her head, and they blame her for what the soldiers did, shooting her multiple times and nearly killing her on the spot. She was gravely wounded, but she survived.
This young man was shot at least three times, and then they shot him three or four more times. I mean, it's a complete disgrace. Just look up, you know, friend of Boston terrorist shot by FBI. You'll be stunned by the story.
Oh, indeed, Jim. We're just about out of time. A very quick final thought.
I can't thank you enough, Stephen, for inviting me on for us to address these vital issues. The Ukraine is a worldwide catastrophe in the making, and what's happened, the exposure of the hoax at Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, and now the involuntary incarceration of the former top psychiatrist of the FBI, these are all shocking developments in what used to be a great nation.
This is the America that really is, not the fiction you get through the scoundrel media. This is the real story. You get it on this program. You get it on other PRN programs. You get it on the responsible media, Press TV, RTV, Voice of Russia. You get the real news and information and analysis. You get what everybody needs to know. And I'll mention very briefly, because I have to sign off, Jim, as you know, I mentioned it to you, I'm working on a book that will be coming out in a very few weeks called Crisis in Ukraine, U.S. Drive for Hegemony Risks World War III, All the content is in. Most of it has been typeset. It's heading for printing. It's heading for publication. I'll mention it again on this program. Mm-hmm. It'll be discussed. It's a major, major definitive work on what's going on in Ukraine. And Ukraine is ground zero on the potential for absolutely mass destruction and annihilation. And everybody needs to understand it. Jim, I look forward to having you back again. There's so much more to talk about.
Congratulations, Stephen. I can't wait to read your book.
Many, many thanks, Jim. Join us. We archive. Always live on Sundays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Archive on Thursdays and Fridays. Make it a regular habit.